Hi, welcome to Bookie. Today we'll unlock the book Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. At the start of a new year, you make resolutions, setting goals for the coming months, losing 20 pounds, finding a higher paid job, reading 20 books, traveling to new cities, and so on. Now, most of the year has slipped past, and you find you haven't even completed half of your aims. Some you didn't even start. Another year, you procrastinated again. Procrastination is often frustrating and disempowering. Most people have these issues, putting things off to another day. The authors of this book are no exception. One of the authors, Lenora Yuen, purchased a tape deck. Then her friend said she could get a better quality model for less money. So Lenora bought the other tape deck. Lenora planned to return the original one, but she delayed. 7 days passed, then 14 days, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months later she finally went back to the original store to return the tape deck. The other author, Jane Borker, remembers the day of celebration when she finally finished the book Procrastination. Ironically, on that same day, she received two reminders. The first was for unpaid parking fines, and the second informed her that her car was long overdue for its annual inspection. You see, even admirable people procrastinate. So why do people procrastinate? What is its root cause? After considering various possible origins, the book concludes that it's not a time management problem nor a moral failing, but a complex psychological issue. Besides explaining the reasons behind procrastination, the authors also suggest a few strategies to regulate your inclinations and overcome your tendency to procrastinate. Authors Jane Borka and Lenora Yuen are both psychology PhDs and senior counselors at the University of California. In 1979 at UC Berkeley, they initiated group therapy courses for students with procrastination issues. They appeared on many TV shows such as The Oprah Winfrey Show in 2020 and were interviewed by newspapers and magazines, including The New York Times, USA Today, Los Angeles Times, The People, and Contemporary Psychology. For many years the pair have staged psychology workshops, lectured at American universities, and spoken to corporations and other public groups. Now, we'll describe the book in three parts. Part 1. The reasons for procrastination. Part 2, combating your procrastination. Part 3, taking action. First, let's look at why people procrastinate. David was a top-ranking student in university. After graduation, he triumphed against fierce competition to win a position with a large law firm. He dreamt of becoming a partner one day. Although David applied himself to the job, he started putting off certain non-urgent but important tasks, such as background checks, client interviews, and producing case summaries. Why? For David, it was precisely because his desire to be a good lawyer was too strong. When he couldn't do things perfectly, he would instead not do them at all. So, if he had a tight schedule, needing to finish work at the last minute, and the results would not be satisfactory, he would simply make an excuse that he didn't have enough time. In the bookie of The Pursuit of Perfect, we noted that perfectionism is the greatest enemy of happiness. Sometimes, as in David's case, perfectionism also becomes a key motivation for procrastinating. You might be wondering, how can a perfectionist be someone always finishing tasks in a hurry at the last minute? How can a perfectionist sometimes fail to complete an important job? Psychologists believe that there are two types of perfectionists, one adaptive and the other maladaptive. Both have high standards. Adaptive perfectionists believe that their performance can meet their expectations. Maladaptive perfectionists doubt they will ever reach those standards. There is a discrepancy between their standards and the way they view their performance. Maladaptive perfectionists are thus prone to self-blame, depression, and procrastination. Just like David discussed earlier, who abandoned activities he could not perfect, maladaptive perfectionists cannot tolerate mediocrity. They think that they should be excellent at everything even without full commitment. They want to do everything themselves and refuse to ask for help from others. One of their most common beliefs is that every problem has a correct and perfect solution. If they can't identify it, they refuse to settle for anything else. They believe that any failure in competition or an incomplete project will make them appear useless. Because of these misgivings, they keep procrastinating. Psychologist Carol Dweck found that people usually react in one of two ways when they face failure. One reaction is described as the fixed mindset, and the other is called the growth mindset. Fixed mindset people believe that intelligence and talent are inherent and fixed. To be successful means to exhibit one's abilities, while mistakes are evidence of weakness and an inherent lack of intelligence. So, they dread failure. People that fear failure tend to procrastinate, so do those that fear success. Everyone gauges their success in different ways. Some seek social status and wealth, while others want a happy family. Psychology researcher Clary Lay defines success as the timely pursuit of intentions. In other words, achieving their ambitions gives individuals a sense of accomplishment. Since the procrastinators falter in pursuing their goals in a timely manner, they always feel disappointed and defeated. For procrastinators, even when they complete the task at the last minute, they still don't experience the joy of accomplishment. In their minds, a rushed success is not true success. On the surface, they might seem to be perfectionists that are too hard on themselves, but what they are really doing is intentionally procrastinating, sabotaging their own success because they're fearful it. You may find it strange. Why would someone fear success? According to the book, if you deliberately slow down work that's going well, feel anxious when getting recognition, don't desire promotion at work, feel embarrassed by compliments, mess up following an achievement, or worry about alienating the members of your family if your accomplishments are more outstanding than theirs, then you are fearing success. The authors found that while success makes people happy, at the same time, it brings unpleasant feelings. These negative feelings cause procrastination. For example, your success might hurt others, making them feel jealous and aggressive towards us. Avoiding success can be self-punishment, holding your life back, not to appear to be living a more exceptional life than others. Or success might set higher standards and force you to work harder to meet them. Some feel anxious that work will overwhelm them with continuously raised expectations. Sean is typical. He is afraid of success, worrying that achievement might bring with it an intensely stressful life. He is a creative architect who dreams about having his own practice. However, in his work, he often delays turning his design ideas into architectural plans. Thus, he fails to keep up with the schedule. The truth is deep down, Sean doesn't want his own company. He has convinced himself without awareness that if he did, people's expectations would be oppressive. They would always expect him to come up with new creative designs and pay too much attention to whether his business is doing well or not. In order to meet their expectations, he would have to work non-stop and would not have the leisure time to enjoy his life. That's why he subconsciously avoids success through procrastination. Whether it is fear of failure or fear of success, the root is the fear of losing control. People want to maintain control of their lives. When they sense that they might lose control, they procrastinate. All of us like to feel that our lives are under control, but there are inevitably many rules that all in societies, communities, or organizations are obliged to follow. For people who are reluctant to defer to the demands of others, their strategy to regain control may be to procrastinate. Think about it. Do you often procrastinate when you are faced with rules? Have you deliberately failed to call back at the time requested? Did you pay the electricity bill at the last moment just before the power was due to be cut off? Are you indignant over late fees for credit card payments? Now think again, did your procrastination cause inconvenience to others? Do you annoy and frustrate them so that eventually they give up imposing on you and trying to influence you, so that you get on with things the way you want in your own time? Suppose you procrastinate when you should obey rules, and it drives others to stop asking anything from you. In this case, you are using procrastination as a way to shore up your independence. Of course, much of the time, you may be unaware of what you are doing. Using procrastination to gain a sense of control can be almost like a reflex. People procrastinate to protest against the imposition of rules, to resist being dominated by others, fighting back against other people's wishes. It keeps others at bay and prevents them from encroaching on their autonomy and privacy. The rules that people resist can be the mandates of external authorities. They can also come from our seniors, or we can even set them ourselves. An example in the book is that Alice's mom always told her to write a thank you note after receiving a gift, and she was always unwilling to do it. Now, even though her mother is not by her side all the time, Alice still feels the urge to be freed from the rule. That's why she will continually delay writing thank you notes. It gives her a sense of freedom. Why do some people kick so hard against rules? Because they treasure independence. It is how they evaluate self-worth. The more they resist anything that constrains their independence, the more self-worth they feel. To them, to procrastinate is to have the final say. While the types of people previously mentioned are compelled by the need to be the victors in a battle for control, others want to defend their personal psychological comfort zone. These people require a defined space. They experience discomfort when they feel either neglected or oppressed. They procrastinate out of fear of both intimacy and separation. People who fear separation are overdependent on others. They can't complete tasks without the support of others. External guidance gives them a feeling of security. They long for someone to alleviate their troubles. Procrastination is their means to strengthen connections with others and escape loneliness. They try to reinvigorate previous social contacts by procrastinating. In such a case, they cherish the deferred task as if it were a human companion who will stay by their side. In this case, procrastination is like a friend and an accomplice who will not abandon them while the work is ongoing. Guy is a good example. When Guy was in middle school, her parents insisted she focus exclusively on her studies. However, when she went to college, she suddenly found she had to do most things independently. It made her feel isolated and helpless, and she started procrastinating. In contrast to Guy, Wally's procrastination is out of fear of intimacy. Wally is a mechanic. Although he knows it's not a suitable job for his skills and temperament, he delays going on a job hunt. It is because Wally doesn't want an employment where he will have to deal with people. He fears that new human contacts will gradually encroach on his life. At least all his current work colleagues know he likes his own space, and they keep their distance from him. People who fear intimacy feel that being too close to others will disrupt their lives. They even have a phobia that intimacy in the workplace will dilute their achievements, so they won't get the recognition they deserve. They've witnessed enough strife brought about by interpersonal relationships that went too far. They worry that they too might reveal a dark side of their personality in an intimate relationship. They still crave intimacy, but at the same time are afraid of a loss of integrity. Procrastination is a defense mechanism to avoid getting too close to others. We have come to the end of the first part of this book. We have known how the pursuit of perfection, fear of success, the battle for control as well as the fear of both intimacy and separation can all cause procrastination. Now let's get ready to consider at how to deal with procrastination. Before fighting incidents of procrastination, we must first learn about the psychology of procrastination and its manifestations. Many people want to eliminate procrastination from their lives but haven't given it much thought. In fact, a first step towards managing procrastination involves investigating the manner in which we procrastinate. First, let's consider things that you keep pushing off. They may be from today, last week, or last year. Not doing them might have made you feel wretched about yourself. Do they all fall into a specific category? Home chores, work, study, personal hygiene, social life, or money matters? People normally don't procrastinate in every area. There are always things that they get on with straight away. A mom of two might balance work and family pretty well, but the thought of dealing with piles of emails gives her a headache. A pilot might perform well at work, but keeps putting off their plan to quit smoking, fails to pay taxes and credit cards on time, never gets round to necessary home and car repairs, and couldn't maintain a lasting relationship with a partner. After identifying your areas of procrastination, try to think about the level of impact each area has on your life and well-being. The area with the most significant delays might have caused you the most trouble. Then reflect again, what is the main difference between the things you postpone and those you do according to schedule? Do you tend to put off the trivial tasks or the vital ones, your own business or other people's, things you are skilled at or where you lack experience? By answering these questions, you'll realize that your procrastination is selective. No matter how much one procrastinates, nobody is hopeless across the board. Now think about what are the consequences. They could be external involving situations and other people, or internal affecting yourself. External consequences might include financial and job loss, low grades, unfinished study or training, missed opportunities, conflicts in the workplace, tense relationships with family and friends, fines and penalties, etc. Internal consequences might include self-criticism, embarrassment, anxiety, inability to focus, feeling of being cheated, overexcitement, etc. Well, how do you feel now after reviewing these behaviors and the consequences of procrastination, demoralized or relieved? If you start to blame yourself, try not to. Suppress this negative feeling and calm yourself down by cultivating an inner voice that will constantly oppose negativity, and then think about what you can learn from this analysis. Now, if you feel calm enough, let's look at the diversionary tactics we use to avoid getting on with the task at hand. What do you do when you procrastinate? Eat, read books, call up your friends, surf online, watch movies, or tidy up your desk? Of course, when you are doing these things, it doesn't always mean you are procrastinating. Everyone needs time to relax. But how do we tell if we are relaxing or procrastinating? The answer is to focus on how you feel at that moment. Most people will notice the special sensation of procrastinating. There is a voice in their head that works against what they are doing. Many parts of the body might feel a bit uncomfortable, and they might not be able to concentrate or properly enjoy the things they are doing. When you realize that you are just procrastinating and doing unrelated stuff, think about what you are supposed to be up to instead. When you decided to postpone working on your main task, what did you say to yourself to make it seem justified? Maybe you think you should only start working when you are fully prepared, perhaps you believe should relax a little since there is not enough time to get the work finished anyway. Maybe the weather was so good for outdoor activities that you didn't want to waste time working indoors, or you felt a little tired or distracted. Perhaps you think most of the work is already done, the rest won't take too much time. These are all the excuses you might make to justify the procrastination. Now, let's go back a little further before you started to make excuses to yourself. What actually led you to procrastination? What were you doing and how did you feel? Here is an example. You planned to make a table as a gift for your partner. When they asked you about the progress, they told you that everything you have ever made is a piece of art. You tried your best to make the table artistic but couldn't satisfy yourself. You were worried that if you give your partner an ordinary table, they'll be disappointed. Then you thought, the weather is good today, why should you stay indoors and work so hard? In this example, the fine weather is the reason you use to avoid the challenge of making a perfect table. It was your partner's expectations that make you procrastinate. Be aware of both the excuses you use and of what stimulates your procrastination. This awareness will help you turn excuses into motivations. All excuses have grains of truth. For example, sometimes you actually feel tired and need to take a break. But still, you use this as an excuse because you want to avoid the things that bring you discomfort. If you indulge the excuse, it will turn to procrastination. It's undeniable that everyone has those moments. They feel tired and lose their immediate passion, but the non-procrastinators disregard those feelings. Instead of immediately quitting, they'll work for another 15 minutes and then take a break. When you identify the genuine motivation behind the excuse, you'll be able to reevaluate the excuse. Instead of thinking I'm tired, so I'll do it later, now you can say, I'm tired, I'll just work for another 15 minutes, and then I'll have a rest. The change of attitude turns excuses into motivations. We have now reached the end of the second part of the book. In this section, we considered types of procrastination, its consequences, styles, and the excuses people make to themselves to justify putting things off. Now that you have a better understanding of procrastination, I believe you are ready to take action and fight against it. Let's get started. Procrastination makes it difficult for us to achieve our goals. Procrastinators often have a hard time even conceiving appropriate goals, they are either too open-ended or too ambitious. If you want to overcome procrastination, you must set realistic behavioral goals. What is a behavioral goal? These goals are tangible. They can be measured by ourselves and others. They are specific and concrete and can be broken down into small steps. Sometimes the first step can be accomplished quickly in just 5 minutes. An observable goal means the behavior is something others can observe. Imagine that a hidden surveillance camera is recording every moment of your life. Observable behaviors will be visible on the screen. For example, simply claiming I'd like to feel less overwhelmed by work isn't an observable goal, because others cannot see if you are feeling overwhelmed or not. On the other hand, I'll make an appointment with the dentist is an observable goal, because the camera can verify your action by recording your call to the dentist to arrange the appointment. To be specific and concrete means to know when you'll act towards a particular goal and with whom you'll collaborate. For example, I want to reorganize my life is a very vague goal. But my husband and I will spend 2 hours cleaning the home office on Saturday is a specific and concrete goal. It means if you've done the cleaning work on Saturday with your husband, you've achieved the goal. So how can we break the goal above into smaller steps? Cleaning the home office can be divided into cleaning the computer screens and keyboards, organizing files and dusting the bookcase, emptying the garbage bin, vacuuming the room, etc. The first step could be wiping the computer screens or some other tasks that are the easiest to accomplish. Of course, sometimes it is challenging to set goals ourselves that aren't too vague or too ambitious. That's when you want to ask others for help. Now, after setting a behavioral goal, the next question is when do you plan to start acting on it? To accomplish your goals, you need to organize. A plan will help you remain calm, progress steadily, and not feel overwhelmed as a deadline approaches. Making a plan does not mean you have to work relentlessly. It means a reasonable balance between work and leisure and allocating time for contingencies. When you make a plan, you need to know how much time you have available. Psychologist Neil Fiore invented the unschedule. This plan lists the unmovable things you must accomplish every week. Through this weekly table of fixed items, you'll know how much spare time remains to achieve your goals. This way, you'll map how your time is used. The unschedule is conventionally organized on a weekly basis. It requires people to list all the things they have to do at certain times throughout the week. Empty spaces indicate the free time they can utilize. For example, an engineer had planned to spend 3 hours every day for a week to finish their design draft. When they completed the unschedule for the week, they were surprised to see that they couldn't squeeze in 3 hours a day. If they had gone ahead with their plan, they would definitely fail and end up behind schedule. It should be stressed that the items in the table aren't the things that you think you need to do, but what's already been arranged, or in other words, what's inflexible, what must be done. The unschedule itself is not demanding that you do anything extra. Not only can the unschedule help you visualize the spare time that is free for planning, but it also keeps a record of the progress towards your goals. Color in the corresponding cell when you've worked on a goal for 1 hour, if you've worked half an hour, shade in half a cell. For example, Sonia spent 1 hour toward her goal on Tuesday, a half an hour on Wednesday, 1 hour on Saturday, and 2 hours Sunday, so she can see at a glance that she spent a total of 4.5 hours this week. By marking down the time spent, you can clearly read the progression on the table. It will encourage you to focus on your accomplishments and feel proud. A positive attitude will in turn motivate you to keep pushing towards your goal. One of the greatest challenges facing procrastinators is their fear of an unknown future. By planning ahead and using the unschedule, procrastinators can transcend their vague apprehension of time and focus on a specific, measurable, and limited framework. Still, this is not always sufficient. Random events and unpredictable encounters will sometimes encroach, stealing time away. We need to know how to circumvent these meetings and occurrences and seek help when we actually need it. Procrastinators are often ashamed to ask for help from others. They think they're not worthy of being helped. They view needing help as a failure and believe that they should do everything solely by themselves. The reality is asking for help doesn't mean completely letting others take over, but using the relationship with others to empower our actions. When you are mired with procrastination and your brain feels locked, you should seek help. Of course, in this scenario, not everyone is helpful. Think carefully about who will offer you the best support in the current situation. They should be friendly, inspiring, non-judgmental, pragmatic, and able to focus on your goals. If the person you seek help from couldn't offer relevant tips or realistic solutions to your problem but blames you, they are not suitable. In addition, make shared plans, work collaboratively, or commit to a public goal. These are all effective ways of receiving potential support. In order to abolish procrastination, we also need to avoid the people and throw out the things that consume our time unnecessarily, distracting us from our goals. When we don't know how to turn others away, procrastination itself becomes the strategy of deferred or indirect rejection. To overcome procrastination, we need to learn how to be direct in our rejections. You should learn to say no to things you don't need. You don't have to support others, out of fear of seeming rude and causing offense to feel self-worth. Keep away from the people that engender feelings of boredom, fatigue, incapacity, or displeasure. Also, don't waste your time doing things that are inconducive to your current goals. Of course, different contexts will affect your priorities. A thing could be trivial in some instances but vital in others. For example, suppose you are writing a marketing brochure. In that case, there is really no immediate need to tidy your desk. But if you need to pay off a loan and couldn't find the contract, it is necessary to tidy up right now. The key is to know whether something is required to be done immediately or not. If not, you can put aside trivial matters for the moment. That concludes the content we have for today. Now, let's briefly review and summarize the book. In the first section, we learned about the causes of procrastination. These include perfectionism, fear of success, the battle for control, as well as fear of both intimacy and separation. In the second part, we found out about the things we need to know before we can take action to overcome procrastination, such as the different manifestations of procrastination, its consequences, styles, and diversionary tactics. In the third part, we were offered specific ways to overcome procrastination, such as setting behavioral goals, planning ahead, seeking help, and rejecting distractions. Although the authors provided many practical suggestions, the goal was never to eliminate procrastination in one go. This book has taught us to know and accept both our strengths and weaknesses. We must get along with ourselves and gradually move away from our entrenched habits of procrastinating. By listening to this bookie, we hope you'll have the courage to address your procrastination, learn to accept it, and to act constructively.
Dir hat dieser Podcast gefallen? Dann klicke jetzt auf Abonnieren und empfehle ihn weiter. Bleib immer auf dem Laufenden und folge uns bei Twitter, Instagram und Facebook. Mehr Podcasts findest du auf meinpodcast.de.